Would you say tides are caused by the moon and the sun passing overhead? Or would you say, don't be silly, everything in space is in free fall, and so it's differential acceleration, differential orbits, which cause different parts of the planet to fall at different rates? This is Peter Hill Explains, where I get to the heart, I hope, of what is a rather shoddy world of the explanation of tides. Now, I suppose the textbooks, look, they are technically wrong, and the kids, when you describe them, you can get out the correct answers from them about the shape and number of tides, but their understanding is fairly thin on the ground, and I suppose what concern me is reading articles, popular science articles where tides weren't completely well explained. And of course, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I try and add a little bit more up-to-date, rigorous science knowledge behind things. So let's go through a process here of reminding ourselves what tides are. So I can't speak with you, so I'm just going to go through a list of things which will clear your brains to it. Then I'll go through the a proper scientific explanation. Then I'll have a little bit of a tour of some of the misconceptions and my experience in learning about tides to see if it connects with your ones, and then go about some new revelations I've had about tides from reading a New Scientist articles. So let's talk about the tides. If you're can remember to your youth, you'll probably be can remember a sunny, beautiful beach with long sand. No, you have to be in Australia for that. But what will happen is that you will build a sandcastle, and the water will tend to move inwards and knock down your sandcastle. But later on, when you're trying to get the water more involved, it goes out to sea again. And so our first experience of tides is that the water comes in and out. And what we learn a bit later is that the water level rises and lowers. It's, there's some sort of force on it. We think if it's moving, it must have a force on it. And this is seen at various times. Probably you might be aware of it happening every couple of hours. In fact, it happens twice a day or up to four times a day. But let's get some more experience of it. Slightly older, you might have might go fishing or boating, and you'd be aware of the tides. Fishing, when you're pulling up bait from the sand, you just put your little suction cup over the sand and pull up these little mussels or bivalves, we call them pippies, great for bait and stuff like that. And there's various things that you learn about the tides and the animals and various things. You'll through history, you'll see 1066, King Harold went down to Normandy to beat up the French first, but unsuccessfully, so we were told by the Bayeux Tapestry, because the tides went the wrong way. Of course, the tides in northern France are pretty spectacular. The tides up in northern Australia are also pretty spectacular. Some of the biggest tides on Earth are up there. But the tides in northern France with the shallow beasts means that the tides rush in at the speed of a galloping horse, and of course has captured these poor hapless Saxon expeditionary force and caught them up to be mercifully released for back to Britain on the condition that they give all of Britain to them. It's sort of a bit of a head scratcher to actually go through it, but let's not stop with that. And of course, you've got from the earliest books, you've got King Canute, who sat on his chair, if I can believe the pictures I can remember from my early books, and he gave political orders. He was a bully to everyone, but couldn't bully nature. He sat there as the water came up. And then, of course, there's these cartoon fiction dramas, probably in a movie, where people are buried up to their head and the tide comes in, the horror of it all. So that should get you some ideas of the tide. If you're looking at science, you'll be told, look, the tide is very important. It squishes Io's moon as it rotates around Io, the moon of Jupiter, making it squirt volcanic plumes of sulfur into the air. This little yellow close moon to Jupiter is being struck by tidal forces. And you might even hear of the king or super king tides, where the moon, the sun, and Jupiter all align. A harmonic convergence creates these very rare tides. I think it's twice a year, roughly, that you get your king and king tides. These are very large tides which come in, and there's tidal waves and all this type of stuff. So let's get into the actual good explanation for it. So what we're going to do is, rather than deal with the sun and the moon, that's a bit confusing, we're just going to say goodbye, sun. You're 153 million kilometers away from us. Let's deal with the moon. You're a mere 400,000 kilometers away. That's 10 times the diameter of the Earth. So I don't know if you've got a pretty old clapped out car, it will have gone 400,000 kilometers. It's actually quite usual to see some of the commercial vehicles which ply the outback of Australia easily do that distance, and they've easily travelled the distance from Earth to the Moon, 400,000 kilometres. The diameter of the Earth is 40,000 kilometres, kilometres around, actually by design rather than by accident. But we'll get onto that possibly at another day. So we have the Moon orbiting the Earth, or the Earth orbiting the Moon. It really doesn't really much matter in this case, because let's move to the Moon, and the Earth is in free fall around the Moon, because we're going to look at the tidal effects of the Moon on Earth. And bear in mind, I'm going to give you a pretty direct, straight explanation here. I'm going to break up the Earth into three locations, easy for you to remember. Rather than calling them ABC, I'm going to call them NMF. N for near to the Moon, M for middle, and F for far. I'm going to do that cognitively, so you know the letter and the position, but then I'm going to use letters so that it can be located in your head. I'm also going to, at the same time, set up you as a model, where the Moon is off to the left, you're the Earth, your left hand is the near side, your head or nose is the middle, and your right hand is the far side. And you're going to orbit around, walk around, and you'll notice that your hand, your nose, your two hands travel at the same speed as your nose goes around. And that causes a bit of a problem, because in space, orbits are very distance sensitive. Now, on another podcast, I've discussed Kepler's law of orbits, and there's cubes and squares, and that's a bit hard to remember. There's a much simpler, intuitive way to remember that. The fact that you increase the radius by, you increase the period, which is the time for it to planet to get back to its same place in space after travelling around its object. It's proportional to that multiplication factor you have for the radius, times that multiplication factor, again, the square root of that multiplication factor. So that might be a bit hard. You might be scratching your head. Let's say I've got one object at a unit of one distance out. I increase the distance out by a distance of four. Do that. I can do that. So there's, imagine a circle at one unit around radius and another unit four around. So it's actually a bit confusing to look at it. Just if you imagine in your head it's one unit, then you go three extra units out, and that's four in all. So it's a bit sort of maybe a bit hard to imagine, but see if you can imagine. Now that thing orbiting four times further out will take a period of four times longer. That's sort of pretty well. It's going four times as far, but it's also going a little bit slowly. So the period is increased by a factor of four, and the square root of four is taking eight times as long to go. So if you say had something having a period of a year, by the time it's four times further out, it'll take 8 years. But the general thing is that the further you're out, the slower it wants to go. So if you're imagine you're a toddler, so you've got toddlers on both sides. The toddler further out wants to dawdle, and the toddler on the right wants to go on the closer to the sun in this case, or the moon in this case, or the massive object is want to go faster. And what you do is that you're in charge or in the middle, and you actually pull them up to go the same speed as you are, and what happens is that the one on the side has an orbit, is going too slow for its orbit and begins to fall into the sun. So if you slow your speed of orbit, you'll change orbit and downgrade your orbit, and if you're being pulled too fast, you'll be flung out. So the tides are actually always a squeezing of the planet, or pulling apart, ripping apart the planet. It's not all squeezing, but it's actually pulling apart. Imagine some dough in your hand, and you're actually pulling it apart from either side. So what's happening is that the part of the Earth towards the Moon wants to actually travel faster for that orbit, but the Earth is actually pulling it back, and so therefore it's going in an orbit which goes not on the path of the central orbit, but will go on a path pointing further towards the Moon. And the part on the far side, the F side, will be being dragged forward and be flung out to space on a larger orbit. So if you just basically switched off gravity on the Earth, which is holding everything together, that goes of the hand, you would toss the side of the Earth on F out into space, into a larger orbit, and the side towards the Earth, towards the Moon, which is going a bit too slow, wouldn't be going fast enough for its orbit, and actually pull away and go to, and find, settle into another, elliptical orbit further down. This is what it is, because things in space are in free fall, and a person in a space station is experiencing gravity, but they're in free fall, so they experience the gravity in terms of the path that they go, but they don't experience gravity as a force. So indeed, when you have tides, you don't really experience the force of the Moon. It's just your free falls in a different direction. It's important to get this straight, because you then have that the Earth is actually pulling itself apart in the gravitational field of the Moon as it goes across. Rather than being a point, it's actually an extended object which has got differential trajectories that it would prefer to go on for the particular velocity involved. And that's what tides are about, scratching ahead. You'll have to write it down and think about it. And I suppose the real issue is that the simple idea that the Moon's above us, so simply like a magnet above a steel plate, it's a bit more different, because there's not a table and arm holding the two apart. It's a little bit more complex and also simple. But here's the time for our first model. You get a tennis ball, mark on one side, Australia on the other side, well, I suppose London, and you extend it or squish it down. You'll see that as you rotate it around, the squishiness will go either. This is generally a high tide in Australia and London at the same time, at the same sort of instant of sort of universal time. But as you move it around, the tide will move, the actual planet squishes a bit. And in fact, it's not just the Earth that moves, it's not just the water that moves, it's also the rocks and everything moves up. and the water moves up more because it's a liquid and it can actually move there. And we'll discuss that a little bit more. But if you've got two or more bodies moving about, your tide will break up to squish along the line of protecting you and the source causing it. So there's always will always be a tide. Now, we've got to really think about this before we go too much further. There's always going to be a tide between you and the moon, and with this squishing model of differential acceleration, there'll be a tide on the opposite side of the moon, and similarly for the sun. And if you can see these squishing effects, if they do line up, you'll get something called, I think it's called a spring tide, and then if they're out of aligned by 90 degrees, the moon squish and the sun squish will squish the Earth in the same on different axes. So you'll have the Earth will turn, wait for it, a bit square. In fact, the circle will be made up to be a bit more of a square shape, you know, with the tides on both sides. And the important thing is that the tide is constant, fixed in space, because the sun and the Earth aren't moving that much. The actual Earth spins underneath it. That's an important fact. So besides it not just being us being lifted off into the gravitational field into the sun, a certain aspect of that is correct, but it's not going to get you very far. I mean, look about that. But there's also the effect that the Earth is spinning through the tides. And of course, as the Earth slows down through tidal effects, this will not happen anymore. So this is, I suppose, an interesting thing to try and get across to kids. The fundamental thing is that your beloved story about the moon passing over, the moon gravitational field pulling stuff on the surface of the Earth upwards, it's just not a very useful, it's something easy to teach to kids. You could teach it very quickly, but it's not going to help them work their way through. It's tidal effects are due to an extended object having differential orbits in a gravitational field. So the tides actually do things like rip apart comets and a whole lot of other things involved. That'll get you to the basics of it. I'm just going to cover really quickly how I came across understood tides, and it was a really complex process. May I tell you, it was complex. So I learnt it the standard way at school, and I, like everyone else, made the sort of mistake. I was really surprised that the tide was high on the opposite side of the moon, and then I really struggled to understand it. And then I sort of got myself a little bit convinced, and then I went off to university, as you do, and studied some general relativity. And there were questions about trying to explain tides with general relativity. It seemed a bit over the head. But by the time I failed trying to explain, or didn't do the successfully understanding about general relativity, one of the basic things of general relativity is things are always in free form, unless they're not. But then you need a bit of quantum mechanics to explain it, because we're standing on top of a quantum froth of electrons. Things are bulky because of the uncertainty principle, if you'd like it. We'll go to it later, but our sensation of gravity is really a sensation of gravity versus the quantum mechanic. We're feeling the pull of gravity, but the push of the Earth, which is a Pauli exclusion principle, go and figure that for a while. But the important thing is that general relativity really didn't help me through it. It set me up in the correct level of thinking. And then there was, of course, a simpler view to say, oh, look, if I break up the Earth into this NMF system, at any one point in time, the far side of the Earth is going to be wanted to fly off to space, and the near side of the Earth is going to fall to the sun because it's not travelling faster. So that was a very quick way of understanding. Now we come to the next sort of deeper part of the podcast, if you're still listening, is the idea of resonance. That is that, I suppose, if you're beating a drum every once in a while, the actual size of the oceans determine whether they're sort of big enough and the right shape to be actually pulled up and change shape and size and move. And this means that as the shape of the Earth is changing, the shape of basins are changing, as the Earth, as the oceans are increasing and shrinking and all that type of stuff, I'm told now that the Pacific is got as big as it's going to get, and it's going to shrink, and the Atlantic is going to increase. I don't know. Obviously, I suppose you have to have some sort of balance, but it doesn't always happen that way. The actual shape of the oceans determine the actual size of your tides. So you've got the force, and obviously the water is running, and so it's the actual shape of the ocean. So historically, as the Earth is doing this dynamic equilibrium between supercontinents being formed, the last supercontinent was 350 million years ago, before Australia said enough, and India said enough, and a whole other people said enough, we're leaving you apart, we're in free fall or free movement until forming another supercontinent. So between forming supercontinents, we form tidally sensitive basins. So the actual size of tides actually does change due to continental drift, which is continental drift is the observable function, and underneath it is plate tectonics, which is powering continental drift. The major thing is that the size of tides are a certain factor. The size of tides that you actually experience on Earth is due to the stellar things, and also the Moon, the Sun, Jupiter, Saturn, Mars. If you really want to push it, you can push every planet in to really tug a huge tide. But it's dependent on that, but it's also dependent on how the continents are sitting at the moment. And it's not something effect that you're going to visibly see, but it is a historical factor in there. And I didn't know that aspect of it. Another point is that the actual surface of the Earth, our rocks that we are on, rise and fall underneath the tidal force, which I suppose the tidal force you can talk about. It's obviously a force that if we see motion, I see motion, it must be force. I feel almost like a caveman saying that. But that's our definition of what a force. If I see an unexplained motion, or in any frame, that's a force of that frame, or a distortion. So if I see someone's face and it's all contorted, someone's probably behind them pushing their lips together or something like that. So you can so a force is something that I summon up to explain a distortion. So obviously the tides are distorting and it's a force there, but really, it's the actual deeper understanding is this differential acceleration. The same acceleration forced on it by being connected by the Earth, but wanting to have different accelerations and winding up in a force that you see as tides. So the basic thing to remember is that, I suppose the most basic thing is that for any source of a tide, it leads to high tides or effective distortion towards and away from the distorting source. And then, of course, there's other things into it. You'll see your tides don't quite match up as the water floods through to where it's really interested in. You can actually feel a local tide in the area due to the actual shape of the basins and the water involved. So if it's a deep ocean and you've got shallow shores, that lifting up will cause a more effective tide. So the tide actually does vary all around the planet in quite surprising ways. That's all I have to say on tides, and I hope basically in this to increase the rate and clarity of my explanations. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on doing science, thinking science, and ultimately teaching science. We'll all be better off if we know things a bit better. Thanks for listening.